you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to Spin the Rally Pod. It's a post-rally Mexico, this one, and we're actually recording this together for once. My name's Colin Clark. Joining us for this one is ex-team boss and Mexican, I was going to call you Mexican magician, wouldn't be fair, George Donaldson is with us, and our award-winning journalist at Dirtfish, Luke Barry, who's been in Mexico for the first time. Boys, I have to say, George, first things first, what a magnificent room you have.
I have. It's in the Plague Hotel here, Colin. Apparently 80% of the people living in this hotel got very ill for a limited period of time, and I happen to number amongst one of them.
Yes.
Not a very comfortable 8 hours. You do feel
Why didn't we do this in our hotel room, Luke? Why have we come to George's plagued room?
Don't made a mistake,
don't
we?
Don't eat and drink here. That's all.
We have made a mistake. I have to say, though, George, what a view. We've
stunning
got a view of the sunset, a view more or less over the service park here in León. Sun setting, it's being packed away, boys. A return to Mexico. Mexico is where we all abandoned the place in the face of COVID 3 years ago. We've come back. It's been a real celebration, hasn't it, Luke?
Yeah, well, George is drawing breath.
Yeah, it has. Sorry, Georgie. Coming to you in a sec.
I've said it a lot in the video coverage we've done, Colin, to you, that it's the colour of this place. That I've always watched this rally from home, from a TV, on a very different time zone, and it's in the middle of the night, you're following it, and you don't have the same energy. But being around all this, and the colour, I keep saying the word colour. I'm trying to think of a better word to use. But yeah, it's incredibly special, George. As you know, you've been here before. You've come here back for, well, the first time in quite a long time you've been back, hasn't it? But
yeah,
it's a vibe about this place you don't get anywhere else.
7 years since I was here.
I don't believe it's 7 years.
I think
I'm trying to work that out.
2016, I reckon it was, Colin. The energy of this event is just not matched anywhere else in the world. The attention to detail of this event, stunning. The people that we meet, whether they're rally fans, normal Mexicans in petrol stations, fixing our punctures, filling our cars up with fuel, everybody is friendly and happy. The event itself runs like clockwork. The emergency services were tested here. That's the first time they've seen the hybrids.
Yep.
You know, they were faultless in their response to Lappi's accident. Mm-hmm. We saw at the start the manager of the event, Gilles Spitali, running around making everything happen. Colin, you mentioned Patrick Subervill, you know, the architect of this event in the past, his family, you know, just this rally is so worthy of the championship. And yes, Luke, the colour. I think colourful is the word you're looking for.
Colour's right. Colour's a great word. It's atmosphere. It gives us something very different in the championship. And I've always said this about rallying. What is special about rallying? Many, many things. But what makes it appealing, I think, George, and Luke, to a broader audience, is the variety that it offers. Yeah. You know, it offers a variety. It offers, you know, as we know, we go all around the world, but we're not on circuits. We're not on street circuits or wherever. You know, we're in these different environments with different challenges. And Mexico offers a very particular challenge and is therefore a very, very exciting proposition each year.
High altitude roads that are very, and it's a stupid thing to say, I know, very man-made roads. They are. Relatively new roads.
Very well engineered, George. We've had this discussion before.
Beautifully engineered roads, getting established. So it's getting a little bit smoother than it was 10 years ago, but it's still a rough, tough event. An event that normally commands some respect. Yeah. Normally, the fastest man will not win here. He'll end up on the side of the road. And maybe that happened. You know, maybe that happened with Esapekka Lappi. But ultimately, I think it's a little bit easier to manage it. But by Jove, this rally punishes the slightest mistake. The edges of the road are just stone. We saw it. We saw it with Lappi, and we saw it also with Katsuta. Just tiny, tiny little mistakes. And paid so heavily that price.
They did. Let's talk then about our winner first, shall we, boys? Sebastian Ogier. My admiration for Ogier. It's almost a man crush. It's really almost a man crush. I'm really sorry.
That's embarrassing, Colin.
I know. I know. I you know. It must be, and I need to kind of rein it in a little bit. you know, to me it appears that that man just gets better and better and better. He is the most intelligent driver we have, the most experienced driver, and in some ways, you'd find it hard to argue against, you know, saying that he's the fastest driver we have now.
It's quite incredible how so many years, I say so many, it feels like so many years, it's only a couple of years, but since he stopped driving full time, that we're having this conversation that we could be contemplating that he actually could possibly have somehow found another level in his driving. Everything, we've spoken about it throughout the weekend, Colin, everything just seems like he's got every factor in place. Everything in his life is well balanced. He is happy driving. He's not having to stress about championship points when he's driving. He's just having to do what he wants to do. He's driving events he really wants to drive. For example, he didn't go to Sweden. Never been the biggest fan of snow rallies. He loves this rally. He's come back to Mexico. It's just incredible that he's this good. And it shouldn't surprise us, because Sebastian knows he's an 8-time world rally champion.
And it's Mexico, where he's won 6 times previously. Yeah. Yeah. But it does surprise us, because there's always a generational change, isn't there, George? You've been there when generational changes have come on two or three occasions.
I've seen at least four, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they move on, and yeah, they come back occasionally. But did Sebastian Ogier ever go away? That's the question, I suppose,
the cynics will ask.
But look, the point you make for me is the interesting one. He's happy. Mm. He's really happy. He's not fighting anyone anymore. And he spent an awful lot of his career fighting various factions, whether it was the team when he was in his first spell with Citroën, you know, at Volkswagen, he was fighting the FIA. You know, he spent a lot of time fighting. He isn't fighting anyone now, and he's loving it, George. But you know, that generational change that we thought when Ogier went was perhaps upon us. And clearly last year when we had Cali Rovanperä winning the title, we thought, yeah, there's a generational change here for sure.
Without a doubt. I mean, we have to talk about Cali Rovanperä separately, because he has that unique growth up through the sport, and he does have the experience which belies his age. I mean, massively so. But I mean,
Ability that belies his age.
I think it belies his age, belies his age. Sorry,
belies. You know, belies. Belies. Is a bit experience. Experience.
Because you know he started driving when he was 4. Or 3. Yeah. Most other people didn't start driving until they were 16 or 17. And the sort of driving he did was all competition-based. It was all about that. Mm. So he gained a lot of that innate experience that you know everyone else just learns when they first get into a car, or even first into a rally car, which might be not until they're 19 or 20. Now, Sebastian Ogier, is remarkable in that he got up to that level and then he plateaued and maintained it. Never dipped down. You can look at other drivers. You can look at maybe the only other driver I could begin to compare with that, but not in terms of championship, was Marcus Granholm in more recent times. Obviously, Sebastian Loeb is exactly the same, and the two are so parallel it's untrue. But then you've got the likes of Colin McRae, who came up in a rush and then, you know, fell away again, never ever achieved that type of plateau. Richard Burns, well, his opportunity was cut short, obviously, with a life-ending disease. And there's a number of other drivers that have come through, reached that top level and faded away. But Sebastian Ogier, his work ethic, his focus, I mean, he is steely determined. I mean, his whole approach is so good. I had a quick chat there with Tom Fowler down in Toyota, and I said, Tom, does it almost make you disappointed that you know, Seb's coming along and winning? And he looked at me surprised, saying, of course not, this is fantastic. I said, well, sorry, I didn't really mean it like that. I mean, you do all this work developing the car and the drivers, and this interloper comes in and just jumps into the car and wins it. And he said, George, not at all, this is a dream, this means my car is fabulous. Actually, he didn't use those words, I used those words for him, because he wouldn't be that boastful about it. But basically, you know, it's a testament to his car, so he's happy. But Seb is just that exceptional, mature thing. And you got to remember that if you go back over the last 35, 40 years, drivers always in their 30s, you know, early to mid-30s, are the fastest guys, the guys that managed to do this. Seb Ogier, Seb didn't win his first rally. Seb Loeb didn't win his first rally until I think he was 28 or 29.
Is that right? I'm not sure when
Seb Ogier won his, but I'll bet it's about the same.
27.
I think.
I'd be guessing.
Marcus Granholm was something like 31 or 32.
Look. You know, we can.
Sorry, I digressed away.
No, we can wax lyrically about Yo Sebastian Ogier.
Let's talk about this fabulous event.
No, we're still talking about the event, you know, and Ogier's win here. It sparked a lot of debate, hasn't it, in the media centre and I'm sure in the broader rallying community about whether or not Sebastian Ogier might decide to have another tilt at that ninth World Championship this year. We talked to him, didn't we? And he seemed pretty adamant that nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. What do you think?
It's an interesting one because you're right. He has always insisted that since he's made that decision to sort of scale back his commitments and focus more on family life, that he won't come back for a full season. And in many ways, why should he? Because he's still able to lead a championship by missing a rally. So it's that for him himself must be incredible because he's not a record-driven driver. I don't think there's anything in him that is desperate to somehow match and beat Loeb's record of 9 titles. He's happy with his 8. But I don't know. Like, obviously, he's out for Croatia the next round as well. Another win there. Extend the lead. If it gets to a point mid-season where he's still sitting pretty, I think it will be very, very hard for him to look at that. And
I think he won't do Finland.
He definitely won't do Finland.
He could probably drop a couple of events and still win.
You know, absolutely. He could have a look at the calendar and say, well, I don't like Finland. There's another one there that I really don't want to do.
I'm told he's doing Kenya. So,
definitely doing Kenya. I think he's more or less confirmed that. So we'll have to wait and see. Wonderful stuff, I have to say. You know, okay. You know, the sensible money was on Ogier at the start of the event, but he was just supreme. Well, supreme out there.
My top three, I did a spot top three with our intrepid cameraman, Elliot. The first time we met, he immediately bounced on me. No hesitation, George, top three. So within a second, I said Elfin, Ogier, and then I think I said Lappi.
I think you did. Correct? I think you had Lappi. Do you remember what you had?
I had Ogier, Lappi, and Loubet. At a point, Ogier, Lappi looked all right.
Ogier, Lappi looked good. I had Ogier, Neuville, Tanak.
So you got the top two.
I got the top two, so I was reasonably pleased with that. Well, let's talk about that then, boys. You know, from really early Saturday morning, we kind of knew that Ogier was going to win it. But from early Saturday morning, we had that great battle, didn't we?
It just immediately switched to that pair.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was incredible. That was just as good as a great battle
between Neuville and Elfyn Evans. For me, it was really, really important that Evans held on to that lead of his. You know, the 10-second lead, didn't he, going into Saturday? And it just toed and froed. And he lost a few seconds on Saturday, but he still had a lead to defend today. Really important for him personally that he held on to it. Now, he didn't hold on to it, but I still think, in some ways, he won't be too deflated by that because it was an issue with the car. He responded to Neuville's push this morning through the long stage, took more time back, looked really good, 20Ks to go, 4 seconds in front. He should have won it. Then he breaks, or he bends the arm, George. You want to make a point?
Yeah, he bent the arm, so he bent it. He took that extra speed, and the car got damaged.
You've had a look at this?
Sorry?
Have you had a look at the
incident?
No,
I've not had a chance yet, because I need my laptop to look at it properly, to go back over everything. But you'd have to say that, obviously, he pushed very, very hard in Otatis in the 35-kilometre stage, and that's where he bent the arm. So, you know, he then lost 3 seconds in the next stage, which wasn't much, but just that little bit where he knew he had to take it a little bit easy. I mean, his comments that I heard was that the car was damaged. He beefed it up a little bit, but he knew he couldn't take the big hits with the car.
But do you think he'll still take positives from this?
Oh, he has to. Colin, it's immensely positive.
Immensely positive. And this is the thing, when we talked to Latvala said that, you know, there has been progression over the last 4 or 5 rides. They can see the progression, and it's continued here.
Yeah.
He's not far off. He's really not far off.
No, he's not. He's not. And I feel, I must be honest, I feel a little bit guilty because I think I've been part of that brigade that's almost been too harsh on his performances. And I think it is purely because for a couple of years he was, going into the last round, a world championship contender. But in some ways, the problem when you get to that situation is everybody expects brilliance all the time. And in a way, why shouldn't we? But I think Evans obviously had a bad start to the year. He said something very interesting to us in the media zone where he sort of admitted that last year he sort of lost his way a bit because his strong suit has always been building up points, which is exactly what he's doing this year. But last year, without that sort of comfort zone, he had to push harder. He was all a bit at sea. But at the minute, as I say, I do feel sorry for him that he's missed out on second. But as you say, I think he can be very, very happy with third because it's his first podium in quite a long time. And as you say, he looked relatively comfortable and happy the entire weekend, which we haven't been able to say all the time this year.
Absolutely.
Not only was he comfortable and happy, there hasn't been a lot of retirements in the championship this year.
No.
Not a lot. Obviously, we saw Ott losing a fair bit of a chunk of time here, yeah. And he's dropped points, but that's yet to come. So there's only a few points in it, but across the if we extract Seb Ogier out of the championship points, which is extremely foolish to do that, I think there's only about 8 or 9 points.
Nine points. Nothing. Interesting thing, the point you make there, Luke, about you know, in 2020, wasn't it? And 21, he was right there, Alvin Evans. You talk, George, about drivers that reach a level at the top and plateau,
yeah.
And very few have reached that plateau at the top and yeah. managed to maintain it.
Yeah.
You know, drivers who have tried to get to the top, you know,
lots
and then,
of them.
And then
lots
drop
of
back
them.
Down
yeah.
again.
Lots and lots
How
of
many
them.
Of them have then been able to pick it back up again, you know, when they've yeah. lost it? And is that also an issue
well,
or
you
not?
Do, you
do
get,
see that up and down, up and down, you know?
You do and you don't, because the results don't necessarily belie the performance, you know,
yeah.
they portray the performance, sorry. So it's difficult to really measure that. But yes, we have.
Right.
We have seen drivers fall right down.
And then bounce back up?
Yari Matti had factory drives, driving World Rally cars, and he just kept crashing. In 2006, his management, which is the Jockey Empire in Finland, put him into a Group N car to do the PWRC for
he was
the championship.
Here in Mexico, that's where I first met
him. He was here
him.
In Mexico, where yeah. he wouldn't listen to Big Dog, that was me.
I know, I remember.
Mr. Jockey charged me with sorting him out, yeah. which was great fun, or not sorting him out, but helping him to understand the Group N cars. And I told him, you need to drive like your granny here, because it was still very rough at that time. This rally was really rough.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's a Group N car, drive like your granny. Does she drive fast? Well, she's quite quick. Drive slower than her here. I said, if you come back here to first service leading by, you know, 30 or 40 seconds, you've probably done enough damage that you will not finish the rally.
Right.
Well, he arrived back at first service, I think, a minute and a half in the lead. However, the last three rallies, so in Japan, also a very rough rally that year, I said, now look, this is another one. Drive like your granny. Well, he drove like his granny. Right. He did not lead from the start. He only just did it. Now, unfortunately, the car broke on the last stage, which was not his fault, categorically not his fault. But the following two rallies, Australia and New Zealand, he won. He learned basically at the end of New Zealand rally, we celebrated that Jari Matti had finally understood what strategy and tactics were.
Right.
And we had a big laugh about it. We had quite a lot of parties that year. We went away quad riding in the bush in New Zealand,
right.
had great fun together. And he learned it. So there's a driver that has gone down and come back.
Mm.
Okay, never world champion. But there are others. You'd have to give me a few minutes.
Yeah.
Didi Auriol, you know, a man that ruled at Lancia for a long time. Slipped down the running there as Lancia slipped away, came back to Toyota, world champion.
Mm.
You know, there's quite a few. Juha Kankkonen, 4 times world champion across how many years? I think it was across 8 years, 9 years he did it. He won his first world championship in 1986 and his last one, I think, in 1994, if I'm not mistaken.
Three, I think, 93.
93, yeah, Didier was 94, you're absolutely right.
Sorry, if I just outsmarted Joe's
No, you're not outsmarted.
No, it's been a long week, but that's big...
The point is, you
know,
to see someone do what Seb Ogier's done and Seb Loeb done, that's totally unique. Only those two guys have ever
absolutely.
Done it. We think that, I mean, in all likelihood, it would appear that... Carlo Rovanperä is going to be something similar, and don't you start that nonsense.
It's not George. No, I don't know because I don't know how long he's going to stay.
Well, indeed,
you know.
But he'll stay as long as he enjoys it.
But one of the very just a little insight. One of our, I think Rovanperä's contract is up at the end of this year.
Really?
And this really well-regarded Finnish journalist said to me. He said, obviously there'll be a new contract for him. But the next contract will probably be his last contract.
Right, okay. So it'll be a 5-year contract.
And that'll be his choice.
Yeah.
That'll be his choice because
yeah.
because he just wants to do so
yeah.
many other things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm not saying
absolutely.
He won't.
No,
he can win and he will win so many times.
Yeah.
Let's move on again, boys, to Thierry Neuville. because Neville is quite a remarkable character. You, I refer to Oit Tanak as the warrior, because he is, and that will always be rooted in Rally Finland last year. That was just the most tremendous performance from him. But do you know what? If he's the warrier, I've got to come up with a similar name.
Street fighter, perhaps, George. Scrapper.
Maybe he's a scrapper.
Unbelievable tenacity, and Neville's
ability to wring the neck of that car to get the most out of it. And we saw it on so many
stages. Very, very rarely makes a mistake.
But the car can be quite wild at times. But he manages almost to control the wildness. It's like controlling a wild horse.
I was having a giggle at him when he's talking. So he's the fastest car in the rally, apart from Sebastian Ogier, who's got a lead, but sometimes taking fastest thing. Yeah, but the back end of the car is kicking out. And then you watch the video, but incredible helicopter footage here. The speeds these cars are going at. Well, of course the car's back end's going to step out, Terry. What did you think was going to happen?
Bumps and
I think
flying.
He just says these things to keep the team. I think I read on one of your articles, he says things just to keep the team alert and to get us all talking. Of course the car's going to step out. Of course it's going to bounce around. The guy's got it by the neck, and it just seems to go, and it just comes so naturally. So, yeah, you know, he's a street fighter.
We've said since Monte Carlo, Luke, that you need the rub of the green to win the world title. He's been the bridesmaid five times now, six times runner-up in the championship, something like that. We saw that incident in Monte Carlo where he went into that hairpin too hot and the car went backwards through basically a driveway. You know, when it could quite easily have smashed into the wall either side. Sometimes it needs to go your way to be world champion. You know what? I think Neville is looking good this year because he's pushing so hard. And in previous years where he wouldn't have got away with things, seems to maybe be getting away with him this time.
Well, I mean, you know, he went backwards through the gate. I bet he took aim at it.
As it went wrong with the handbrake.
But you do. I mean, as a rally driver, you know, when you're going off, you pick where you
never
go.
Never asked him that. That's a good question
you
to
pick,
ask him,
you
Luke,
pick
on the
where
next
you
event.
Go. You can't be sure you're going to manage it. You thought, well, there's maybe a chance there. Let me see what I can do.
Yeah, maybe.
I'd forgotten he'd done that, to be fair. But to go back to your point, Colin, I think, yeah, I would agree. Even if you look back to last year as well, I'm sure this rally, and again, someone can correct me if I'm wrong with this, but I'm sure this is his fifth podium in a row. Well, it's definitely he's done three in a row this season. He won Japan at the end of last year, and he was second in Spain, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So I would make that five, if I can count.
That is five.
But the form, and is it everywhere we go, and a lot of them, they're quite different events. If you think about Japan, you think about, there's a few tarmacs in there, but Sweden here, he's just utterly dependable. And I think last year was a lot better than people realised as well, but he had to get through the period where the Hyundai was a difficult car. But yeah, there's absolutely no reason why, to be fair, any of them couldn't win the championship this year. And this is what's great. We mentioned it before, but these four guys split by 9 points. It could go any way on any event.
It could.
Yeah, I remember 2018, that epic three-way fight for the title between Ogier, Tanak and Neville. We've got, not Ogier this time, but Robin Perra and Evans in there. I honestly think four of them could be going to the end of the season with a chance.
I think you're right. Well, let's talk then about that fourth contender, the only one of the four we haven't really talked about. Oit Tanak.
Some revealing comments to you tonight, Colin, about the car. I was interested to hear that. He said, well, there's the car and here's me.
Yeah.
You kept pushing him on this. And he said, you asked him again. And he said, well, the car is the car. I said, I think it's very good, but it's not suiting me.
He called it a mismatch, didn't he?
He called it a mismatch. So all
that.
Of a sudden, he's actually said, actually, this car is really quite nice, but it doesn't suit me. So I can make it go fast sometimes, is what he was inferring, but I can't make it go fast all the time, which is what I need to be able to do to dominate the way I need to and I want to and I have to do to win rallies. So not getting what he wants out of it. It's a good package. It works well. I mean, honestly speaking, Craig Breen was consistently faster in some ways. I think if you looked at that, Craig Breen was always in the fight for the lead before he had a problem. He was never far away from the lead on so many rallies. In Finland, he was challenging in the top three.
Right.
And then he made a tiny, tiny wee mistake in a horrible place. Yeah. It was just the tiniest of mistakes.
Yeah.
So heavily penalised. But that car was on the pace.
Mm-hmm.
So it just underlines what Otto's saying. Actually, the car is the car. It's not doing what I want it to do. And when I can make it do what I want it to do, it's brilliant.
That needs to come soon, though, doesn't it? Although the way the championship is going, you know, it's giving me, the M Sport, a little bit of breathing space in that regard.
Definitely is.
You know, because we might have expected him to be quite a long way behind at this point in the season, but he's absolutely not.
No. And despite this disastrous start to this event, where he lost, what was it, 10, 11 minutes?
In the opening stage, or the opening certainly Lupus stages. Yeah. So what do we think then? You know, we'll go to Croatia, it's tarmac. For Oit to be still there or thereabouts, what does he have to do in Croatia, Luke?
It's a good question, and I think it probably ultimately depends on how much extra comfort you can find. We know he's doing a rally in Belgium as a warm-up. He's done Monte Carlo, which essentially was a dry rally, so that will probably help him if Croatia is dry. Mm. That's another big if. But he needs to keep tabs with the Toyotas and Neuville.
But if Croatia's wet, I think that'll suit him fine, won't it?
Well, that's the other way to look at it. Yeah, in those sorts of conditions, Tanak can outdrive himself. He can overdrive. Yeah. We'll be on the sort of the comfort of his car. Yeah. But yeah, it's an interesting one. From what we understand, he's basically pushing for a completely different design philosophy of a car. And that's not easy for a team to do in such stable regulations within a season. But you're right, at some point the clock's going to start ticking. We're just going to have to hope that is sooner rather than later, or not at all, that M Sport can give Tanak something that he can work with, because he can get results out of the car. It's just he's not doing everything he really wants to do. And if he gets to that point, that's when the others are going to be incredibly
worried. They've got to watch out, because Tanak in a car he's comfortable with, for me, is still
Is the Marcus Grönholm of the modern day. Yeah, the man that could go to a rally, go to New Zealand and win from the front.
Yeah.
You know, I know Seb's done something similar as well. Slightly different kettle of fish, but you know, but Ott is that guy. Ott is that guy that will actually not lose when he's first on the road. He's that man. But he needs the car to be his car. It needs to be part of his body.
It needs to be his car. It needs to be his car. You're absolutely right. We've talked about our main title challengers and our top four or five here this weekend. Let's talk about Esa-Pekka Lappi.
Yeah.
Because for me, Esa-Pekka Lappi on Friday had probably his best day in a rally car.
He said that, didn't he?
And he said it himself. And not really just because of the result or where he was, you know, because he's been leading rallies before on a Friday. You've got to look at the context. He was there, one car behind Ogier, battling tooth and nail with Ogier. But for me, it was his demeanour. He had something about him which said he'd actually maybe accepted that his place at the top table was a deserved place. It was a place that he could defend at the top table. He knew he was rightfully there on fire. I just felt there was something very, very different about him.
Interesting. I was left in the middle ground. I didn't get to watch much of the footage live on the Friday because I was out and about. But I kept hearing the TV commentators saying he was a bit ragged, a bit close to the edge. And I didn't necessarily agree with those comments, so I will review it at a later date, as I'm sure many of our listeners will already have done, and make their judgment on that. It would be better than my judgment at the moment because I've not looked at it properly. But I was desperately hoping that he was in command and that he was going to go into the Saturday. And you know what? You fight to the limit and you don't go past it. And if you end up second or you end up third, that's where you end up.
That's what Elvin's good at, judging.
And Elvin is great at doing that. Yeah. And it's a remarkable skill, and especially when you're seeing progression, because that process will allow you to that approach will allow you to progress because you're living there on the limit and you're starting to learn it and understand it. And, you know, pushing out where you think you can, and then in a few places just bringing it back from the top of the crest of the wave. And you know, obviously, Seb, he sits there in the curl on the wave, you know, just
he's riding
perfect
it
all
nicely.
The time. He's on the lip of the top of the wave, balancing where no one else can. Yeah. But that's the place they're all learning to get to. And it would appear that Esa-Pekka, and I pained greatly to say that, he made the same mistake in Finland last year when he rolled very near the end, although he recovered from that very fortunately. And then I think, was it Sardinia?
Sardinia
he crashed while leading something very, very similar. So has he not learned that little place yet? He's still trying to find that little special place where he can live. Look, he did fabulously on Friday. Take it into Saturday if you can. If you can't, make sure you survive. I mean, what he said happened was that he on a very slight right-hander, which I have viewed, He got a bit stuck in the rut and the car was a bit slow to move out across the road. He was a bit slow to get it across out of the rut. I'm not going to disagree with him on that, but, you know, that would have all been able to be seen on the recce. and judged, and it's all part of the mechanism of surviving and understanding where the ultimate risk is. And he has all that in his body. He has all that intuition and experience in his body. Of course, he's got a massive amount of experience, but then he had the pressure of, you know, I'm in a fight. I'm in the best fight of my life with Sebastian Ogier, who's quite clearly brought his A game, you know, as good as ever, his triple A game. And he just allowed himself to be led into that.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing, George. You go into Saturday, you're 20-odd seconds ahead of everyone else, but you're battling Sebastian Ogier. Think about this, boys.
Yeah.
So he was 2 seconds down, we hear, at the split. Is that correct? Just over 2 seconds down?
I think so.
Something like that. Do you go into that day accepting that you're not going to beat Ogier? Because this is a tactical rally. It's the most tactical... No. You're saying no, George, but realistically, was Lapi ever going to beat Ogier on this event? Was Ogier playing with him? You know, he's brilliant at that, Ogier. He's brilliant. You know, Ogier drives within himself and pushes the others to make mistakes.
He waits.
So it would require the most remarkable self-discipline. But could Lapi have gone out on Saturday morning saying, as you've said, I know where my limit is here. You know, it is folly to try and push and try and beat this guy because he's the master on this.
There's another factor in there, Colin. Maybe team orders. He was maybe
told to go and you
push.
Yeah,
you, we share the risk with you. You know, if the team, I mean, I've said this to drivers where you say to them, I want you to push for the win. I'm on the limit. I'm going to go over the limit to do that. There's a risk. I accept the risk. Go for it.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Luke?
It's interesting. I really like that question asking if he was ever going to win. It feels big and it sort of caught me out, actually, that he said it, but it's a very fair question because as brilliant as Lapi's Friday was, there was a sense that Ogier wasn't toying with him. That would be strong.
Maybe a little strong, yeah.
But I think Ogier was in the still, for him, a place he knew he could win the rally from. Ogier knows how to win these rallies. Lapi, there's a bit more pressure. We had this quite remarkable scenario where we found out that in the lead up to the rally, potentially if him and Neuville were around, that Hyundai couldn't rule out sacrificing Lapi for wins and stuff. So was there a little bit of trying to prove a point? I don't really know. It's not really my place to answer that without knowing more information. But yeah, I think Lapi would have had a very difficult task defending Ogier, but equally, second probably would have still been a good result.
I think it would have been a great result. Yeah. That's my point. You know, maybe a difficult mental situation to deal with on the Saturday morning, George.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Absolutely. I did speak to him before the rally myself and had a wee chat with him. And I said, I think some of the judgment about team orders seems a little bit harsh. I said, I think you've got something to prove. And he just nodded his head to me, you know, and one of his wry smiles. So I said, oh, yes. So yes is the answer to your speculation, Luke.
Okay.
Yes, I think he was out to prove a point. Absolutely.
I agree with you on that one.
To judge that pace on Saturday morning. Yeah. Hey, Luke, we can cut. He was doing the job. I think there's a possibility the team told him, go and push. Yeah. Because then there's a good chance that he'll push Seb. Because Seb would have, Seb wanted to win. Seb has made mistakes before.
Ah.
And he, you know, he can get a puncture the same as anyone else. And
he has got a puncture. That's true.
You know, he got a puncture in Japan last year, didn't
he? Yeah,
we
got lots.
So you
of
know,
punctures.
So those things can happen. So they don't happen to Seb Loeb, to Seb Ogier, sorry, when he's cruising. They happen to him when he's being pushed.
Good point.
So, you know, your sacrificial animal is Esa-Pekka Lapi. So you say, Essa, you push him as hard as you can for as long as you can. Let's see if we can get a puncture out of him. He drops back behind Thierry, and all of a sudden they can just... Thank you, Esa-Pekka. You did that brilliant job for us. Now your reward is second place. We're going to give it to... And that's fine. You know, in team terms, don't like it myself, but there's a thought pattern that maybe the team pushed him into that. So I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, thinking maybe he would have been more comfortable to have just driven his pace, kept it as it was, taken a bite when he could, and see where it leaves them. Just judge the pace and get a feel for that nice place, that crest of the wave where he wants to be and wants to learn to survive all the time, rather than this over the front of it, crash out, fall behind. And we've seen him fall behind that curve as well, where he all of a sudden starts going really slow.
Yeah.
He's done that. So he's not learned that fabulous place yet. On Friday, it looked like he had done, and then he didn't manage to hold it on Saturday. Whether it was him or whether it was the team pushed him, I would say it was a reasonable suspicion that the team told him to say, "You go for it, boy."
Yeah,
I think he did, and that gives him, you know, he's not mentioned that to anyone. I've never heard him say that, but if that's happened, then I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, assuming it has happened.
Yeah, there you are. Absolutely, I'm very hopeful for Esa Pekka Lappi. I do believe that he's made a step forward over the last few rallies, and I think he'll be able to maintain that. A few other drivers that we'll just very briefly, if either of you boys want to say anything about it, you can, before we go on to WRC2, because we're just slightly running out of time here. The other drivers, a bit of a nightmare for Takamoto Katsuta, a real nightmare for Pierre-Louis Loubet, and a little bit of a, as maybe we might have expected, a steady rally for Danny Sordo.
Yeah.
Anything you boys want to say about those drivers?
Danny did what he needed to do. Pierre-Louis Loubet, he's not listening to his co-driver yet. He's got the most fantastic co-driver in the car, and he's clearly not taking
what
the
advice.
What
do you base that on, George?
A discussion.
Okay.
It's not some valuable insight. No, he's got to trust his navigator and learn when to push and when not to do, not to push.
Yeah.
And I know that's very difficult for a driver to accept. It's a new relationship. It's building. The trust is building. Nicola, you know, he'll be out there fixing the car every time he breaks it at the roadside. He's very, very good at that. He had lots of practice with TNA in the past.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to see it coming good. And, you know, the kid's got speed, never showed any of it here on a rally where, you know, if he'd made a mistake, the mistake he would have been normally doing was to go too fast, and he's not.
So, interesting.
Taka, just a tough one.
Yeah.
But okay, it happens. Yeah. You know, he's up against three teammates and three other drivers that are just fantastic, best in the world. So,
yeah, there we go. Luke, those drivers, anything?
No, in the sake of time, I won't say too much. The only thing I think that's interesting is that Loubet and Katsuta were the two Rally 1 drivers that came here without any Mexico experience. Mm-hmm. And they're the two that probably made, aside from Lappi, the sort of maybe biggest mistakes of the weekend. So it just shows how difficult a rally this is to learn, I guess.
To master. Yeah,
underlines
really
the experience again. Yeah. Rally's all about experience. It really is.
And particularly this one, you know, where you get one chance a year at this kind of high altitude rallying, don't you?
WRC2. So, we can't call it WRC2 anymore.
What is it then?
WRC 1.1. It's so close. It's so close, Colin. What can I say?
It's
phenomenal. But it's brilliant.
It is brilliant. You know, we used to come to rallies like Mexico and Argentina and Australia. And the support category was generally
Group N.
Group N. It was quite thin, wasn't it, George?
It was 4 or 5 seconds a kilometre slower than the WRC cars of the time.
But my point is, you know, they generally weren't that well supported by the top drivers in that category.
Yeah.
You know, this time out, we've had three former Rally 1 drivers and the reigning WRC 2 champion, and then a number of other very decent drivers along as well.
It's been brilliant.
The start list was great.
It
was great to watch, and I'll be absolutely honest with you, the results are a surprise to me. Gus Greensmith has driven probably better than he's ever driven in his life. I have never seen that consistency from Greensmith. Greensmith has shown in the past, even from the very early days, I remember when he was in the little Fiesta in the British Rally Championship, he's shown remarkable glimpses of pace, but he's also shown a little bit of an inability to bring the car home. A lot of times, fair enough, down to the car, but you've got to say some drivers have sympathy with cars, some don't. But he's made mistakes. But this was his most consistently quick rally, I think, I've ever seen and from him. And I think he answered a lot of questions and proved a lot of people wrong here this weekend.
Yeah, I think
right,
so.
Yeah,
and he said to us he didn't reckon he has a point to prove, but I think he maybe referenced that to himself, but I think to the wider world, as you say, he has proved a big point. But I think there's three key things I'm going to go through very quickly if I can.
The
first is moving environment, which I think is quite interesting because throughout his entire senior rallying career, he's only ever driven M Sport built cars. So the chance to drive something else is, and we've seen what that can do to driver lights. So Craig Breen in Sweden, the best possible example there. He looked completely lost at M Sport, moved to Hyundai, or moved back to Hyundai, and he's found himself again. Secondly, I think less pressure. As much as you, WRC2, I would agree with you, George, is mega now. It still isn't as in your own head. Fighting for WRC2 win isn't the same as fighting for a win on the overall event. I think that helps.
Of course not, yeah.
Thirdly, I think his seat time. If you consider how much he's getting it, I think somebody told me, I can't remember who it was, bless me, but it was, he's getting 2 days ahead of every single rally, plus testing with Skoda and national events in between. So he's in the car consistently this season.
Yeah,
and in
yeah.
the past, particularly
and,
at a team
and
like
the pre-event test on the, yeah. the Monday.
Right? Yes, yeah.
Well, at M Sport as well, of all the Rally 1 teams, that we know that their budget wasn't always stretching for testing. So the comparison there is massive, and I think that's making a big difference as well. But full credit to him, because I agree, he looks completely assured all weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. You had 3 points to make.
That was three.
Was that all three?
It was three.
Yeah. Was
that three? I did
pay attention. Pay attention.
Well done.
Following Luke's lead on that, I was really heartened to see Adrian Formo perform brilliantly here.
Yeah.
Couldn't quite take the challenge to Gus. And then finally fell foul of an alternator belt got kicked off, which he repaired. Very difficult to repair that in a stage. The car battery goes flat very quickly when that happens. Mm. He would have had to drive to a hilltop, find somewhere with a downhill. He would have probably not have enough power to start the car. He then had to change the fan, but had to find somewhere he could stop safely, change the alternator belt, which is tricky to do. Got that done, and then managed to get the car started, and then of course it immediately charged again. The alternator runs, and he got the car back to the finish. But he, of course, he lost a massive amount of points. I don't know if he scored any at all. I've not looked
well
at it. He lost about 17 or 18 minutes. But brilliant performance.
But that proved a couple of things there. That performance from Formo, it proved his ability, as you say, and his mechanical ability. We saw that in Spain a couple of years ago. He changed.
I certainly saw it in Safari the last 2 years. I can guarantee you that.
He knows his way around the car. But it also proved that there is still something there with that Fiesta Rally 2 car.
Yes.
Because it's been comprehensively walloped by the Skoda for the last, 2 years, probably? Yeah.
Well,
certainly in the World Rally Championship. And for Formo to come here and be battling amongst them.
The R5s, as they're known, the WRC's U category is populated with R5 cars.
Rally 2
cars. Rally 2 cars, sorry, it's called these days. If you fancy, but the I think on the homologation form it still says R5, but the bottom, it's a fashion thing, and but Skoda put the effort in, they put huge development into it. It's a pure customer program. We've got the TalkSport team running 4 cars on this rally, 4 cars. So that was Gus.
Emil,
and I can't remember who the third one was.
Greisen. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we never saw him all weekend.
No, he crashed early on. But you know, 4 cars all competing at the top, and it's a one. I spent the afternoon in there this afternoon, leading up to the finish of the rally with them, and such a lovely team to sit in there with and friendly, and everyone looking after each other, everyone clapping for the car that goes through. It very much had the old PWRC atmosphere that we used to have in the communal dining areas. Absolutely brilliant.
Jesus, if I could just, communal dining areas of the PWRC, they were happy days.
They
happy
were brilliant, yeah.
If I could just add on the Fiesta as well, I think firstly, Formo as a driver, to me, he looks like he's dealt with the step back into WRC2 very, very well.
Yes.
So it'd be very easy for him to have looked at last year and been frustrated and been very desperate to prove something this year. But he's just gone about everything very maturely. I think with the car, I would agree. In Mexico, I think even Malcolm Wilson, if I remember correctly, at the start of the event, wasn't necessarily expecting them to be in the ballpark with the Skoda. I think it's a very conditional-based thing, though. I think if we go to Croatia, I would expect that new Skoda to still be the class of the field, the Citroen to be up there. We saw it in Monty. The car wasn't quite there on pure dry asphalt. But I think on a rally like this, where it's hot and it's sort of different things are required, very different things are required from the car, it was very clearly there, which is great for M Sport because the car
and it
has
was strong,
taken,
Luke.
Yeah,
it didn't
strong.
Break.
That George, that's really
it was strong.
No disrespect to the boys at M Sport, but you know, we know just how strong the Skodas are. They are like tanks, you know, and they're almost indestructible. But you know, they've had issues with reliability in the M Sport car in the past, and it okay, we had this alternator problem today, but up to that point, it was remarkably strong.
Yeah.
Remarkably strong.
Yeah, it was very good.
Quick words. about August Solberg.
Remarkable,
pre-season favourite.
Remarkable is the word. What incredible times he made today. Amazing.
He was a bit unlucky, wasn't he? What was his problem? A puncture, wasn't it? Yeah. Puncture late on Friday.
Yeah. There was a puncture then, some kind of strange sort of engine issue or something.
Something happened. It went down on cylinders today, didn't it?
Three cylinders on the last stage.
I think ultimately it's a rally of what might have been. I think in a way, I don't want to say he's lucky, because that sounds like he's not earned it in any way, but to get a podium out of a weekend with that many problems, I think when he goes home and thinks about it, he can be quite happy with that. Yeah, I can understand that he'll be frustrated, because I think he probably did have the pace to at least challenge, probably beat Greensmith.
To have those problems.
Well, to get past, he took 25 seconds out of Emil Lindholm in the long stage today. And I think he was within 15 with two stages to go.
He almost won Super Specials outright as well.
He was second in one of the Super Specials. Yeah, it was quite
and a driver remarkable. Last year that was looking utterly helpless and lost, and you know, why was he even there in that Hyundai?
Yeah.
You know,
no, he's shown real resilience. Job, you know, with young drivers, it is really easy to knock the confidence out of them, but he's shown absolute resilience, young Oliver Solberg. Boys, there we are. We've talked our way through WRC, and we've talked our way through Rally 2. Final thoughts on Mexico from you, George?
Oh, do you want to do a quick driver's analysis score?
No. What I want you to do, George, is give us a quick...
We can have an argument about that next week.
We'll have that next week after I've published my driver ratings. It's an early morning start.
We'll do that.
Final thoughts.
This event was just fantastic. It's such a worthy contender in the championship. It's got to stay in. They work so hard. They make it all happen. The closeness of all the drivers at the top, the reliability of the cars apart. You know, one turbo fail on one World Rally car, otherwise they all ran basically faultlessly, probably only with driver-induced damage. So that's a remarkable thing.
Very little talk of hybrids either. Let's give credit. Dynamics. I don't remember the media zones asking too much about problems with hybrids. Good job by them.
I believe there was some intermittent functions. But they were all sorted. They never had to carry a problem after service.
No, it was great.
So that was brilliant. So Tom Fowler's fear of that happening at Toyota, it wasn't too hot here, but...
Yeah. Luke, your final thoughts on your first trip to Mexico?
I feel like I've been asked this question a lot this weekend, but I'm going to go back to what I said at the start of the weekend, just to be here and experience the vibe. I think there was a piece I wrote on the website, on it would have gone out on Friday morning, just being in Guanajuato for that street stage, that for me was probably still a highlight of the weekend, aside from all the great stories we have to talk about from the action. But just, I'd always had this vision of that stage being incredible, and I knew it'd be incredible. But to be there and amongst all of that, it was a real feast for all the senses. I loved it, and it's been great to be out here and experience a very different culture and way of life, as well as being around for a brilliant rally.
I'm with George, absolutely. You know, Rally Mexico sells rallying. Yeah. It really does. Yeah, it sells around the world. It's just a wonderful, wonderful...
The imagery we get from this rally,
just remarkable.
And Colin, the coup of the weekend, I mean, of all the drivers and all the teams and everything, the coup of the weekend was us getting parked right next to the flag, the start of the street stage. How's that possible? Normally you have to park 2 miles away, climb up and down hills, traverse tunnels that you're not meant to go through because there's no pedestrian access. Yeah. And we parked literally
right next to the square,
20 metres from the start line. Absolute coup. Actually, I can take some credit for that, Colin.
I'll take a bit of credit for driving us there. You found the fee, I got us there.
I had no idea how to get there, but I did find that there was some parking.
You found the parking space. As I say, Rally Mexico for me, your diversity is what our sport's all about. It provides something very, very special. We mentioned them at the start of the programme. You know, Gilles Spitalier and Patrick Subervill, wonderful job those boys do. I'd love to be back here. I really would, and fingers crossed, we will be back in the not-too-distant future. Thank you all very much for joining us on this post-Rally Mexico Spin the Rally Pod. We'll see you all again next week.
Thanks, Colin. Thank you.